Siren Radio.
So the question we need to put to Abigail LeMay is, Abigail, how is the hand?
The hand is doing much better. Mm-hmm. I was just saying the swelling has gone down.
Mm-hmm.
2 more weeks and I should be out of a cast.
So the official line of doing radio shows to help you heal does actually work then.
Yes.
Excellent. That's what we like to hear. Eloise, back for a whole new scenario. We're going to be talking this evening about For the Love of Sci-Fi in Liverpool and Sci-Fi Weekender in Sheffield. That's 2 March events we're heading off to.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Not been to either of those places.
And you were also photographed recently with selfies and various other folk in Leicester, I believe.
I was. Paul McGann and Peter Davison.
And Paul McGann remembered you.
He did.
Of course he did. We would have had words if we hadn't sort of sorted that whole thing through. No news from William Coles. His voicemail seems to be just echoing there. No news from Anna Lewis.
Perhaps
her voicemail seems to be
perhaps
there.
Perhaps they're linked with each other somewhere in a different
in some strange
somewhere.
Time zone thing. But the Lincoln Book Festival will be mentioned. Eva, Lincoln
Hello.
Book Festival. Will you be looking forward to the Lincoln Book Festival this year, which has the theme of Victoria?
Yes, it's September, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I could actually make it to it.
Wow.
I know.
I saw the lamplight from your window. I didn't think you were home, sitting there all alone. So I came up to your room to ask you why. Why did you hurt me so? Why did you have to go away? Never wanted anything in my life. Not until I met you, I thought you'd see me through all the bad days that I had before I met you. Something in the past, never thought it couldn't last forever. There's one thing I can say. Every day, how I miss you. Oh.
it's never, never, never too soon to actually start planning for what you're going to be doing in September. In fact, there's really only one thing you can actually do on the week of the 23rd of September, isn't there, Ben Lewis?
Yes, there is.
And that would be?
The Lincoln Book Festival.
The Lincoln Book Festival. This year's Lincoln Book Festival, of course, celebrating the life and legacy of Queen Victoria and the era she defined as the nation marks the bicentenary of her birth. Just think, Brexit, probably no Prince Albert. Oh, best not go there. Let's go to another entirely wonderful soul who's, of course, the chairman of the Lincoln Book Festival team, walking his dog at present, so we'll find out what breeze the dog is in a few seconds. Phil Helen-Williams, how are you, sir?
I am very well, and how are you?
Well, a little bit sniffly, a little bit coldy, but all right. You know, the important thing is the show must go on. That's the important
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. And now, how is the wonderful Ben Lewis?
I'm very well, thank you, Phil. Thank you for asking. How are you?
That is great news. For anyone who didn't know, Ben Lewis was an absolute stalwart at the last year's Lincoln Book Festival. Mm. He worked the social media.
Stalwart social
media. Very kind
media.
Words from you, Phil.
Exactly.
Highly professional.
However, you were the main man of the show, Phil. You were the person who led the way and the whole route from that way forward, and it was very successful.
It was good. I enjoyed it.
It was really good fun. I really enjoyed it as well. And then, and not only that, the audiences seemed to enjoy the acts and the people we had there. So it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it was good. It was a bit different. We focused last year on the theme of revolution, and so put some slightly unusual things, you know, like the Big Bang. And so we discovered that we had a different audience. The people who came to listen to Marcus Chan talking about Big Bang and John Robb talking about punk rock weren't necessarily your normal history buff.
It just added to the quality, I felt.
It did.
Well, so this year our challenge is to have a bit of everything. So something that's a bit edgy, but something that's more traditional as well.
It sounds so much like an Eloise Sheehan essay in many ways. A little bit edgy, a little bit, you know, Charles Dickens, is he still writing in 1864 or 1964? We don't know where we're going. Anyway, Eloise, you might be back in London by the time of the next Lincoln Book Festival. Will you be coming back?
I'll probably still be in Lincoln until August.
Well, then, hopefully.
Hang about just a month later.
You know, September, August, what's the difference?
It's literally nothing at all. William Carles is dialing up at this moment in time and saying, William, we'll come back to you in a few moments. Calm down. It's all right. Sometimes it works. Eva.
Hello.
You haven't managed to make any of the previous Lincoln Book Festivals because you've been entertaining people up and down the country.
I know, I haven't been able to.
Is there a possibility that this year you might be able to see the festival which celebrates the profound ages and changes of an age which brought vividly to life literary works by the likes of Charles Dickens, George Eliot, Thomas Hardy, Elizabeth Gaskell and the Bronte sisters?
I might be, yes. That would be something to look forward to. I think I've been to a few book festivals before, mm-hmm. so it'd be nice to put the Lincoln Book Festival on my list.
Exactly.
Well.
This is the way forward. That's the important thing of that movie. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm going to raise this with the listener and indeed with Phil Helen-Williams because William Carles has just texted, "Me free now!" Exclamation mark. Me free now. Okay, we'll come to you, but please, grammar and stylistic. I mean, is it me just being a pedant, Ben, or is it just me free now?
It's just an Edinburgh thing, I think, maybe. Who knows? We'll find out. We will.
In a matter of... Abigail LeMay, book festivals in Canada. They do take place. Are you an attendee? I mean, obviously, you're over here in an exchange program, doing a literature exchange and so on. Your thoughts on what you've heard so far about the Lincoln Book Festival?
I mean, it sounds fun, but I have not actually been to a book festival before. So
no.
I really had no idea what to expect, and now it sounds lovely, and I'm sad that I'm leaving.
Okay, Phil, let's just share the notion. I mean, clearly Abigail can go to lincolnbookfestival.org to find out various other details with respect to that. Incidentally, why Victoria as the theme? Was it a case of you loved the series on Netflix so much and Gemma Louise Coleman was such a fantastic individual, we felt, let's have a whole book festival just dedicated to her. What the hey?
No. The reason is that we're team players. And we were told by our good friends at the County Council that they had chosen Victoria for this year. And so being great team players, we said, fine, we'll do it as well. Now, the thing that they probably know but haven't admitted, is that we're also celebrating the bicentenary of John Ruskin, who is, you know, for me, the giant of Victorians. Anyone who can write about art and architecture, the education of women, and the rights and wrongs of war and manufacturing gets my vote. He's a giant. And there's a new book on Ruskin out this year. But lucky man, he also gets a pretty big mention in my forthcoming book.
I'm glad you put that shameless plug in, Phil, because
it's
important. So please share with us. John Ruskin, looking down from on high, basically say, this is what I did it all those years, all those centuries ago. This is what I wanted. You finally get that acknowledgement on air.
And of course, you know what he said about Lincoln Cathedral. That it was worth two of any other.
Mm.
And there is a letter to the then mayor of Lincoln sitting in the Lincoln Archives that contains those wonderful words.
Two of any other cathedral. So you can take you could take your Ely and you could technically take Middlesbrough Cathedral as well.
Well,
put them both together and they would be worth
York just and Canterbury, Lincoln. Why not?
Exactly. Hereford.
Yes, indeed. Phil.
Bath.
Phil, my turn.
Cardiff.
Well, we get the point now, Alex. Phil, just reflecting on last year's book festival, I know one of the big popular events, the most popular event, was with Michael Morpurgo. Perhaps you'd like to elaborate on your, you know, speaking with Michael Morpurgo and the event itself and how it went down.
I'm tingling. I'm here with my dog and I am tingling. Michael was just so approachable. Our audience, well, we sold out, and the ages probably ranged from 8 to 80. He engaged wonderfully, if I remember, with the year sixes. And he, as a former primary teacher, he knew one or two things about year sixes, and he didn't hold his punches. But it was hilarious. And, of course, we ended up singing with one of the wonderful songs from Warhorse, an evening I will never, ever forget.
And it still tingles even to this very day.
Absolutely.
We have just literally started that tingle routine. The campaign, of course, with Midweek Drive will be starting in earnest very, very shortly as we head off to, clearly, the Lincoln Book Festival. And Phil, you'll hopefully be joining us in the studio in person once again.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I'm in fact, coming down to your great university tomorrow.
There we
to
are.
To talk about the Lincoln Book Festival, but also non-fiction writing.
And you'll be talking to whom?
Well,
students, presumably.
I think.
Good heavens! Wow. Just goes to show, English students, I believe.
I hope so.
Possibly postgraduate, but let's not put any meat on the bones at this particular stage because it's the uncertainty that makes life fun.
Let's keep it uncertain.
What is the name of your canine friend, Phil?
My canine friend is Molly, and she's looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a brown Labrador.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's probably looking forward to a fireside.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Last two questions, please, Ben.
Phil, have you enjoyed your telephone link for today on the show?
I have loved it. Thanks so much.
Wonderful. And we'll be seeing you again very soon.
I look forward to it.
And this one, Molly, is just for you.
Perfect.
It's coming. Don't.
two coils to take your shoes off and throw them in the lake, even if it's the Brayford Pool.
We here now, he here there, we here wherever we are. How are you? Are you there now, William Coles?
I'm here now and I'm very perky. Thank you so much for asking.
Well, that's very good indeed. So where do we find you, William, and what was the challenge with respect to the phone that just seemed to be going to voicemail several times?
You find me in the middle of Edinburgh, wandering through frozen streets. There you go.
Yeah, well, never mind.
Same as normal.
It's in search of all... Wait, now, are you at the bottom of the hill? Are you on Prince's Street? I mean, if we actually cite Prince's Street as the main thoroughfare through Edinburgh, are you near Waverley Station? Are you... Or is that just completely fabricated? Are you in a completely different part of the world?
You sound like you actually know a bit about Edinburgh, if you're talking about Waverley Station. I am very close to Carlton Hill, if you know where, where that is, with the Scotland's Disgrace there, or... version of the Parthenon, which they gave up with after they got another few columns.
You could almost say it was a Victorian folly after a fashion, really, back in the day. But we've had our Victorian feature with Phil Hanley-Williams. And whom would you like to speak to now, William Coles? Would it be the ace Canadian that is Abigail LeMay? Would it be awesome Eva MacDonald, who made it absolutely on time today and is still thinking about a possible sort of route to exit using the bridge in all sorts of ways out of the studios here? We've got Eloise Sheehan, who is still quite chuffed, and rightly so, that Paul McGann remembered her recently.
Yes.
And of course there's Ben Lewis. Who do you want to chat to?
Abigail Mechanic, please.
Hi.
Hi. Do you take offence, like most Canadians, at being mistaken for an American, or do you take it on the chin?
I wouldn't say I get offended, but I do try to correct people as soon as possible so that they don't think
very
that
important.
I'm a bad person.
All right, but you're not offended, but you stick your oar in very quickly.
I just know what people think of Americans and what people think of Canadians, so I'd rather people think I'm Canadian.
Okay, yes, well, of course that's the case. So how can we tell the difference just from the sound of your voice?
Oh, that's tricky.
Americans do
try to disguise themselves as Canadians sometimes.
Is it anything to do with the about a boot thing?
No, I don't think that's a... maybe that's a thing in, like, Alberta. Is Alberta? Or is it Alaska? Yeah. Here we go, geography.
Alaska's not in Canada, though, is it?
No.
It's an American state.
Yeah.
See, this is the trouble.
Probably Alberta, then.
Alberta. Mm. I was thinking, like, Edmonton. Like, all the north, like, the north.
Yeah.
They probably say a boot.
Yeah.
But I'm southern Canada.
In case Tosca Lee, a New York Times bestselling author and resident of Chicago, is listening, I'm sure Abigail didn't mean that you're a nasty person. Yeah, we have lots of American colleagues who actually regularly contribute on the whole thing. We have to sift them through, but we know what you mean, Abigail.
Yeah.
I've never met a bad Canadian, really, so...
Oh, that's good.
There you go. Does that satisfy you, Bill, or are there any other aspects?
Yeah, okay. Just wanted to know if Americans get equally offended at being called Canadian.
Oh, that's a good question. That's one I've never been posed before. Mm. I don't think they would be, but you know what? Maybe they would. Maybe they are.
We'll have to start a survey.
All depends on the individual, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, the sort of sensitivities, right. That's right. William, do you feel that you could still make it as a professional footballer?
Well, it's pretty unlikely. I'm a bit past it. And I've got two left feet as well. It's probably more chance of me becoming a professional ballroom dancer.
Funny enough, that is actually number four of the top five dream jobs women hang on to as they proceed through their 20s, 30s, 40s and 50s. The five dream jobs for women being comedian, ballroom dancing, pop star vocalist, actress, and then doctor, lawyer or accountant. Whereas the top five jobs that men hang on to, number one, pop star vocalist, number two, doctor, lawyer, accountant, number three, professional footballer, four, comedian and five, rock star. Apparently one in every 20 30-something men reckon they could still make it as a professional footballer, and almost one in 10 pensioners think they may yet become famous.
Well, they're 15 minutes of pain, you mean.
So it's never too late, is it? You're taking that with a pinch of salt, I suggest, Ben, really.
Yeah. I wonder who they surveyed. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, according to the details here, it was carried out by Mortar London, conducted an online survey among 1,000 respondents across the UK. We'll be speaking to John Leonard from Ultra, the gym events and Ultra events, etc., who will be actually talking about this tomorrow morning. So you have a chance to speak to John directly. I just wanted to get William's view on that, really.
Yeah, have you had your 15 minutes of fame yet, Alex?
No. It's just, you know...
So it's still to come?
Who knows? Who knows, really? I mean, it's just, we just carry on carrying on. That's the important thing. There's nothing else one can really say other than the last two questions, which I know, in a unique, polite and nice Canadian way, Abigail's going to deliver. So off you go.
Have you had a reasonably good telephonic link with us today?
It's been more than reasonably good. It's been excellent. Thank you so much.
Lovely. And will we be hearing from you again?
Yes, you will. Thank you.
Perfect.
No, 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 they haven't gone yet. They're coming back round the mountain. Just give them a few seconds. Honestly, they will come back. Have faith, have faith. Frostbite, the brand's new single by Danish artist Malmo, is actually released this very Friday via Integrity Records. And it's an interesting little number, which I have obviously had listened to, about to reveal to the Lyric Drivettes. We had hoped to be speaking to Maria from Danish band Malmo. We'll just have to see what happens. Malmo keen to add to the wider discussion of the potentially irreparable damage mankind seems intent on inflicting upon our own planet. It's part of a four-track EP with accompanying video and so on. And it's nicely entitled The Inevitable End. The Inevitable End. Prediction in four parts, each part representing a different way of the world collapsing if we don't change our behaviour. So, Ben, Eloise, Eva and Abigail, are we ready for this little excerpt from Malmo, Frostbite? After which we may or may not speak to one of the singers responsible for this. Just depends whether they answer the phone or whether they just say, I'm sorry, it's not going to happen. You know, so are we ready for it?
Yes.
Think so, yes.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Insides are too still, too silent.
Frostbite, Malmo. And Maria from Malmo is online at present. Maria, welcome to the production. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. How are you?
Very good indeed. We're about to find out what the Midweek Drive team thought of that little epic number. Let's start off with Eve MacDonald.
Hello. I thought it sounded very mystical.
Mystical.
But I liked it.
Okay.
Mystical, and I liked it.
And let's move to our Canadian friend, Abigail LeMay.
Hi. Yeah, I thought it was very atmospheric. It reminded me of an English indie band called Daughter, so I'm a fan of. I'm a fan of it.
Oh, I've heard of Daughter.
Okay. Yeah, I know her. Yeah, it's great.
Eloise Sheehan?
Oh, yeah, I really liked it as well. It's quite different.
Kind of evocative and emotive and Scandi crime dramas and so on. And Ben?
Yeah, I thought it was quite an interesting song, actually. I think like you'd hear it in some sort of Swedish crime drama or Scandinavian crime drama.
Or indeed, possibly, an episode of the CW The Progeny, which we'll be talking about in the second part of the programme. But it's a congratulations, Maria. It's a win.
Well, thank you very much, so.
Let's move on. Talk to us a bit about, you know, it's a fairly, well, I have to be honest, a nihilistic title, really. Frostbite, The Inevitable End. Was it something that you actually sort of had connected with weather forecasts and meteorology in mind? Just share with us how you came up with the whole process and so on.
The whole process of the Frostbite or the EP?
Let's start with Frostbite and then the EP.
Well, it sort of like came together because I went to Greenland like a year ago to play an international showcase up there at Arctic Film Festival, and it just stuck me, like the whole nature of it all up there. It just, like, I was completely overwhelmed by that, like these crazy mountains that looked like giant panda bears just lying all over the landscape, and at the same time, I just knew that it was perishing, long ride, like with the whole climate change and all. So that's when it all started. And
well, it makes sense.
I had these conversations. What, sorry?
No, it makes sense to obviously sort of, you know, reflect on the climate, the whole range of other sort of factors from that perspective. Ben, you're intrigued, I think, when we were saying that obviously Maria is Danish and yet Malmo sounds Swedish.
It was a Swedish city, but is it about 20 minutes, I believe, from Denmark? What was the meaning behind the name? What being a Danish band led you to call yourselves Malmo?
Yeah, a lot of people ask that, because actually I'm not Swedish, and I don't have a connection to Malmö, but it's my last name, so that's why. It's my name. Yeah.
You see, that Maria has put us, so it's eased so many sort of challenges that we...
Because we're all wondering.
Yeah, we were fretting, we were wondering, we said, where is it connected? Is it a whole sort of Scandinavian issue here?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, it's just my last name, yeah.
Eloise, questions for yourself? No. No, it's got me off. Okay, Ava.
Hello. Hello, Maria. Nice to speak to you. I just wanted to ask, with songs like Frostbite, where do you normally get the inspiration from for your songs from? Where does the inspiration come from?
It generally comes from nature. Yeah. When I tend to get, like, my head gets filled up with thoughts, or I've got too many impressions from traveling or playing concerts, I tend to, you know, go out in nature and get overwhelmed by that. And from there, it just kind of happens. It writes itself, not really. But it can also be like conversations with the people, or just a quote I read, or a poem. Or yesterday, I went to the Tate Modern here in London, and that just gave me such joy and loads of inspiration for new songs. So that was a few examples of where I get the inspiration for the song. Yeah.
A song for the Tate Modern. Well, it's got to be some kind of Eurovision entry, so surely, in all sorts of ways. Eurovision has actually started, in fact. People have already started deciding what the song for Europe will actually be.
Indeed.
Presumably an exit one, but never mind, let's not go there. Abigail, any questions that you'd like to put to Maria?
Yeah, I'm curious how long you've been doing music for.
Yeah, I've been doing music for, how long is that now? We started in 2014, and we're 19 now, so that would be five, 6 years. Yeah, something like that. But I've been playing and singing since I could walk, kind of, since I had a voice, really.
Yeah.
So it's not about me just doing it for 5 years. I've been doing it my entire life. So, yeah, I was kind of born with it because my family is, are musicians as well. So yeah, it's just a part of who I am, really.
Wonderful.
And Maria, if you don't mind me asking, I know you said you're travelling in London at the minute, and you've done a bit of travelling around Europe as it is, finding inspiration for songs. Where do you find your biggest audiences tend to be, and what kind of age category do they tend to be?
They tend to be women, and like in the early 20s to the mid 30s. So that's I don't know why. But yeah.
So really, three fifths of the actual studio today, basically.
Definitely. And whereabouts do you?
Yeah, I don't know.
Whereabouts are they, your biggest audiences?
My biggest audience.
Yes.
It's some places in Denmark, and also like it's building over here. I can tell. So yeah. I think it's both places, like in different target groups. They're the biggest audiences, but I don't know. We would have to ask my...
We won't analyse it to that extent. Don't drill down into the data to that sort of routine. Interesting, Maria, in terms of Kasper Vindelof, graphic designer, and Naomi Müller, videographer. How collaborative do you have with these artists in terms of obviously developing that, as we said earlier at the introduction, to develop this discussion of the potentially irreparable damage mankind seems intend on inflicting upon our planet?
Could you say that again?
How closely do you work with Kasper and Naomi as your graphic designer and videographer in terms of getting the whole package together?
Oh, yeah. Well, I work really close with those. Yeah. And it started like I tend to work on the concept myself, and then I I need some inspiration and I need to like get other thoughts on it so I just don't get stuck up in my own head. And then I worked with Casper because he did like the initial artwork for Frostbite, and he's working on The Inevitable End, obviously. And then I contacted Noemi, who's actually from Switzerland. So we're doing a lot of Skype meetings these days because we gotta coordinate and get everything together. So, and she's on it as well. So she works like at the same time as we're doing the artwork for the album. Then she's doing the videos for each prediction for the EP. Yeah.
And we've already said that the album is released on Friday, the 1st of February. Are you excited by that? Is it going to be a major launch? Is it a case of no? Wait until midnight and then suddenly it'll all be good. You can purchase it and all the rest of the bits and pieces.
Yeah, well, Friday is the single release.
Yeah.
So Frostbite comes out on Friday. And the EP is released in fall. So
we'll hold fire for EP from that point of view. But yeah. Frostbite is available on Friday, February the 1st. Yeah. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us today? Has it been okay for you, Maria?
It's been great. Thank you. My pleasure, really. Yeah.
Well, then, can we look forward to connecting with you again when the album is released later on in the year? Will you come back?
Yeah, sure, I will.
I think there's a full midweek drive round of applause for Maria Malmo. Van Malmo, the album Frostbite, or rather the single Frostbite, available in all the usual ways. But actually, Maria, are you around on the socials, the Instagrams, the social media, the Facebook? How can people actually follow you online?
I'm on malmomusic.com and Facebook, Malmo. And Instagram, Malmo Music, and Twitter, Malmo Music, as well. So I'm everywhere, really. Yeah. I woke this morning, bells laid me down by the river. Drifting, I turned on upstream, bound for my forgiver. In the giving of my eyes to see a face. Sounded silent. We'll be right back.
see, at this particular precise moment in time, I normally say it's 5:45, it's time for the Siren News, press a button, whoosh, we're in there. Can't do that, it's 5:45 and 6 seconds anyway. We'll wait and see what happens. I'm sure they're in the process of getting exciting breaking news to us. Still to go, as far as the midweek driver is concerned, we've got Annette Andre, not American Abigail, but originally Australian, although she has got dual citizenship and is actually based in America. So, yeah, exactly. Toscoli, who is American. Phil Hurdwood, also not American. And Robin Pierce, who's Welsh, also, I believe, not American. So we'll find out a bit more about those fine folk as the programme proceeds. And maybe, just maybe, the next thing we'll have in a couple of minutes or so from now might just be the news. I'll say it again. Awesome.
Siren 107.3.
Yes, and they said it again as well. Upcoming, we'll be going to the joys of San Diego, where I believe it's slightly warmer than we actually have in Lincoln, England at present.
Time goes by, as we all know, naturally. People come and people go, naturally. Let's be natural.
As we anticipated with great excitement and joy and all sorts of wonderful things, for the first of her monthly reports in 2019, The Letter from the Other Coast continues with actress, author, general all-round wonderful soul, Annette Andre. How are you, Annette?
I'm fine. How are you, Alice?
Very good, Guy. We're coming to terms with, obviously, a little bit of frost that we're actually having in Lincoln, England, to the extent that the four midweek drivettes in the studio have all been busily sorting out when it's going to reach 2 degrees, 3 degrees, 4 degrees centigrade. I'll do a quick introduction. We have from Canada, originally, that would be Abigail LeMay. And Abigail, as a Canadian, I've had to sort of break the news to her that not all Americans are bad, because as you said, Abigail, you're always very keen to actually correct people when people actually confuse you as being an American citizen.
I don't think all Americans are bad.
Nice.
I just think they have a bit of a stereotype attached to them, poor things.
There we are. As an Australian, I'm sure you've thought that many a time over the years, but what the heck. Ben Lewis, of course, is with us as well.
Hello, Annette.
As indeed
Hello.
Is Eloise Sheehan.
Hello.
And Eva McDonald.
Hello.
Hello, Annette.
There we are. It's just wonderful.
Hello.
So where are you going to take it? Let's do the weather forecast. What's the weather like in San Diego at this very moment in time, Annette?
It's really tough. There are some clouds, you know. There are actually some clouds, yes.
Well,
and there's sun behind the clouds, peeping through, and blue sky, and it's mild, and I'm looking out at the garden, and the plants are thriving.
Well, that's okay, then. All's well with the world, and the White House is still continued in its own sort of shutdown way, which is it's amazing. Where are you going to take us with this audio?
Well, it's not. It's open now. It's open.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just pressing another one.
Yeah. Well, open for a bit, then they'll close it again, then loafed a bit, sort of tease it, like peekaboo. You know, that's probably what he's doing.
That's
he's
right.
Playing peekaboo with the car. Now you see me. No, you don't. Now you see me. No, you don't. Wonderful.
Well, I've got something here that I think you'll like. It sort of does that sort of thing.
Well, then, I think you should go straight into it. Please do, Annette.
All right. It's called Pulling the Wool. Last week, a comic with a penchant for statistics calculated that if Donald Trump kept up his daily spew of 8 to 10 lies, his nose should reach the moon no later than Thursday next. Like a black hole in space, Trump has perfected a talent for hoovering attention to himself in the 24-hour news cycle. But not even this emperor of all falsehoods would claim to have invented the art of the hoodwink. As a recent obituary informed me, a man called Alan Abel was gaslighting the press and the public long before the Pinocchio in the White House had been spawned. It seems that Abel was a professional hoaxer, who worked diligently at flim-flamming A-listers such as Frank Sinatra and Jacqueline Kennedy, much less the New York Times and Time magazine with decades-long success. A former jazz drummer and stand-up comic, Abel saw himself as a self-appointed public gadfly, combining the savvy con of a P.T. Barnum with an unerring instinct for manipulating the news media. What captured my attention was Abel's elaborate planning and intricate staging of his outrageous fabrications. In today's world of the internet, anyone can be a Nigerian prince. But for Abel to pull off a campaign against the First Lady, Jacqueline Kennedy, demanding that she clothe her horses, took considerably more nous than the infantile ego of a Trump stealing the spotlight. For his first major hoax in 1959, Abel created the Society for Indecency to Naked Animals, which sought to clothe all animals appearing naked in public, namely horses, cats, and dogs, and any animal that stood higher than 4 inches. Launching his morally outraged crusade, which he intended as a send-up of censorship, Abel and his band of merry pranksters picketed the White House and in no time had proved so convincing that some 60 chapters of demonstrators erupted spontaneously across the country, with major newspapers, radio, and TV giving the outlandish spoof wide and unquestioning coverage. In a ghoulish echo of Mark Twain, whose demise had been falsely reported in the press, Abel orchestrated his own elaborate funeral with military precision, involving dozens of accomplices and dutifully given a prominent obituary in the New York Times worthy of Huck Finn's creator. Over the years, he roped in unsuspecting celebrities such as Frank Sinatra, who personally called to book a recording session with Abel's intriguing-sounding but non-existent topless string quartet. And then, during a financial turndown, there were the thousands who responded to the allure of an advert he placed for Omar's School for Beggars, claiming to teach the ancient art of panhandling with dignity. His inventory of charades was seemingly boundless, including running a fictitious Bronx housewife named Yetta Brownstein for president, who never appeared in public but managed to win an impressive number of write-in votes with a radio campaign slogan that promised, "Vote for Yetta and things will get better." Having recently published my memoir, I spent an agonizing amount of time and emotion excavating fact from fiction to produce a truthful and at times unflattering account of my life. Why then, I wondered, did Alan Abel devote such considerable effort in the time of his life to pursue the gotcha moment? Given the extraordinary lengths he went to making his fabrications appear to be real, it's clear that Abel had the capacity to be a smashing success in any number of occupations. Instead, he chose to flip off society and himself in a lifetime of clever deceits that kept him only a step ahead of the bill collectors, earning just a marginal living from books and speeches about his exploits of pulling the wool. Towards the end, Abel summed up his life saying that he saw himself not as a con man, but a court jester, a clown, who wanted nothing more than to give people a laugh and a kick up the intellect. I beg to differ. In my take, Abel saw himself as a one-man music hall, headlining every act and worrying that unless his next stunt didn't top the last, there was a hook waiting in the wings or a sandbag about to drop from the flies. On the other hand, considering the alternative, maybe it wasn't a bad way to spend the time of day.
Perfect. Perfect as ever. You know, despite the fact that a certain news company was desperately trying to sort of inveigle their way into the whole system. I believe they should know by now. So, the Society for Indecency to Public Animals. Maybe we should actually resuscitate that. I mean, all of these canines and cats and dogs actually running around without any clothes on whatsoever. It's not good enough.
I know. Isn't it terrible?
Shocking. Anyway, let's sort of open it up for discussion. Eva, I think you're particularly taken with the pronunciation of memoir.
Oh, yes, but you know. I was only saying because I love that word.
That's got nothing
to do with the topic of conversation, but...
it's the way Annette said the whole thing. I'm just impressed.
Oh, I was in awe.
As we look ahead to Valentine's Day, and yes, I know, a matter of days away, why not treat yourself or someone you love to one or both of the special offers? You can, if you go to Annette Andre, official WordPress.com, actually receive the fantastic Where Have I Been All My Life? The biography, the official autobiography of Annette, with a signed photograph, possibly with yourself and Roger Moore as well, thrown in absolutely free. I mean, what is that?
Wow,
Alex. Phenomenal. Wow.
Exactly. It's just too much wonderment in all sorts of ways. But let's go back to your thoughts. Eloise, anything that you'd like to share with us about Annette, or indeed life in general?
I was just, as soon as she said Frank Sinatra, I was sort of gone. I was just thinking
so
Sinatra.
Just mentioning Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, that was enough for me, to be honest.
Okay, that's all we need, clearly. And Abigail?
I just think it's always nice to hear that there are people in America who are not the biggest fan of Trump. Because you're always worried. You're always thinking, you know?
Particularly if you're Canadian.
Particularly if you're across the border.
Yeah. Wall to go up, wall to go down.
I'm always curious how many Americans are a fan and aren't a fan.
Yeah. You see, this is the international approach, Annette, that we brought with a Canadian student into the studio, that there's that concern that you managed to actually provide that righteous adjustment to with respect to Donald and so on. And presumably his peekaboo politics.
Yes.
It's been amazing. Ben, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, Annette, in the near future, can we expect any more projects from yourself? Is there anything, or even Arthur for that matter, is there anything we can look forward to in the near future?
Mm-hmm. I hope so. So long as the stories keep coming in the newspapers and on the telly and things like that you can get a hold of, and like this one.
Oh, the stories never stop. They're never stopping at.
Otherwise, we'd have to sort of say the narratives would then come to an end.
And if not, they'd come over on the airwaves whilst Annette's talking.
Exactly. You know, sometimes they're just doing so many ways. Annette, it has been, as ever, fantastic. And in fact, I'm going to ask Abigail to put those last two questions to you.
Have you had a reasonably good telephonic link with us today?
I certainly have.
Wonderful. And will you be joining us again?
Yes. I certainly will.
And actually, thinking about that, because Abigail, you were born how far away from Niagara Falls?
Oh, well, I live about 20 minutes away from Niagara Falls, but that's Niagara Falls, Canada.
Ah.
Well, technically, yes, Niagara Falls, Canada, and Niagara Falls, Buffalo are right there.
Yes, yes, yeah, that's important because obviously
I never got up. I got very close. I was going there one day and the weather was just dreadful, so I didn't get there.
Fair enough.
I believe the Canadian side is the best place to see it.
I would have to agree. I may be biased, but I would have to agree.
I feel as though we're building that maple leaf of friendship across the borders here, that suddenly you can actually start sharing the whole thing. And they say, isn't it wonderful that an Australian and a Canadian can both agree that actually the best place to see the Canadian Niagara Falls is indeed from Canada?
Yes.
It can be done. Which we could tell a lot of the politicians that.
But we can, Annette, and we just have. Let's face it, these podcasts are available and will be available forevermore. So that's the important thing. If politicians have got any sense, they'll take note. That's the important thing. Annette, we will see you after Valentine's Day.
Lovely. You have a happy birthday.
We will endeavour to do so.
Something that can wash out the pain, and I'm sleeping all these demons away. But your ghost, the ghost of you, it keeps me awake. My friends, had you figured out? Yeah, the soul what's inside of you. You tried hiding another you, but your evil was coming through. And these eyes sitting on the wall, well, they watch every move I make. Bright light living in the shade. You go.
Oh,
Lincolnshire songstress Ella Henderson with Ghost on Siren Radio. And looking at the ways in which people are booked for the Midweek Drive, we have many, many, many routes forward. Many narratives open up in so many ways, especially when we have the delightful Mickey Mickelson, who gets in touch with our wonderful friend Tessa Snart, who actually says, it's nice to connect, a little embarrassed, as he thought that Lincoln today was situated in Lincoln, Nebraska, and not the United Kingdom. Moving on from that, that didn't stop him recommending our next guest, New York Times best-selling author and international novelist extraordinaire, all about the ghostly background. Ella Henderson, ghost, see what I'm doing here. Which opens up with the words, there's a figure standing by the window, arms crossed, outlined against the fuchsia sky, looking out at what must be a spectacular sunset. When her chin lifts, I wonder if she's seen something in the trees. Just the opening words there of the awesome Tosca Lee's latest novel, The Progeny. How are you, Tosca?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. And hello, Lincoln.
England, not Nebraska, just in case people are worried.
That's right.
When you're based in California, well, if you're based in Chicago even, who knows what's going to be happening. Now, really exciting news with respect to what we've just read, a little excerpt of The Progeny, because the CW Network have just actually taken it, and there's a very good opportunity that we're going to see a whole series of The Progeny, which for fans of Countess Dracula is going to be amazing.
I hope so. I hope so. It's been really exciting to watch the process unfold.
So I mentioned Countess Dracula there because there are those of us of a certain chronological age that can remember Ingrid Pitt and the whole sort of Elizabeth Bathory scenario. And somebody who was pretty much known for her, well, let's say it, interesting approaches to beauty treatments in many ways.
That's right. That's right. She is known as the most prolific female serial killer of all time, and was rumored to have bathed in the blood of her victims, which were young girls generally. So,
well, I mean, how else can you actually keep the fresh complexion going if you're not actually
it's critical
to the whole sort of system. And looking at the actual sort of text itself in terms of The Progeny, which of course is a series because it's descendants of the House of Bathory, Emily Jacobs, the descendant of a serial killer, who, as we find out, is Elizabeth Bathory, the most notorious female serial killer of all time, on a quest that will take her to the secret underground of Europe and the inner circles of three ancient orders. One, determined to kill her. One, devoted to keeping her alive. And one, she must ultimately save. Abigail, surely this is your life story as you came over from Canada to Lincoln, really, in Europe.
Yes, of course. It's very similar. No, but it sounds really interesting. I feel like I'm going to have to go pick the book up now.
Filled with adrenaline, romance, and reversals, The Progeny is the present-day saga of a 400-year-old war between the uncanny descendants of Blood Countess Elizabeth Bathory, the most prolific female serial killer of all time, and a secret society dedicated to erasing every one of her descendants. If that doesn't read Academy Award-winning series and Golden Globe-winning series, frankly, I just don't know, Tosca. It's just, the world's gone very peculiar. So what was it about Elizabeth Countess Bathory that effectively led you to start opening up this whole narrative?
Well, you know, I had heard of her, and I had always thought she was a fascinating character. But it was a fan of mine who suggested the idea. I was doing a signing, and it was a fan who didn't have a camera, and this is before we all had them on our phones, but wanted a picture, so I sent him the picture off of my camera, and when he wrote to say thank you, he said, have you ever thought of doing a book about Elizabeth Bathory? And I thought, huh, you know, that could be really interesting. I had been doing a lot of historical novels before that, well, a lot, several, and really wanted to do something more contemporary, and so that's how this storyline of the, you know, modern-day descendants of Bathory kind of emerged. So never be afraid to make suggestions of your favorite authors.
Now, in addition to, obviously, what we've just been talking about in terms of The Progeny, we've got The Legend of Sheba, Demon, a memoir, Story of Eve, of course, The House of Bathory duology that we've talked about, The Progeny and Firstborn. Eva, do these float your boat at all?
Yeah, they do a little bit. Do you know what? I'm terrible. Like,
Innocent, a serial killer there.
But I really need to, like, I need to read a lot more, because I don't read enough books or read in general. I'm more of a film person. Mm. So, I mean, like, Tosca, how would you suggest to maybe influence someone who doesn't read very much to become more
I've had people say before, you know, I don't really like to read, and I think when people say that, or, you know, if they feel like they haven't been reading enough, I think the question is really about finding the right book. And so I think even for people who don't think they even like reading, I think it's just a question of finding the right book. So I think it's very good to get into a bookstore and just peruse the shelves. I like to open books and read the first line or two and see if it grabs me. I like to loiter in the section of, you know, the genre that interests me, whether, you know, it's romance or thrillers or whatever it is at the time. So that's a really good way to kind of get into it. And many bookstores also have staff picks where, you know, the bookstore staff has recommended, and, you know, they put a little sign on the shelf saying what it is about that book that they like. Talking to booksellers is a great way to find great new stories, because they read so extensively, and depending on what you're interested in, they can always make great recommendations.
Now, is this what you'd anticipated back in the day when you entered the planet at Roanoke? Is it Virginia? Roanoke, Virginia?
Roanoke, Virginia.
Mm-hmm. You know, back in the 20th century, Tosca, did you think, ultimately, I'd like to develop my writing so I can start talking about it at a radio station in a different country?
You know, back in the day, I wanted to be a ballerina, and that was my all-consuming passion up until I injured myself as a teen.
Well, I mean, it's never too late, you know, to actually pursue that dream. You know, Darcy got...
I continue, but, you know, I'm turning 50 this year, so I don't know if it's going to happen.
We can open that
age is just a number.
Precisely. Chronologically gifted.
That's right, okay.
That's our motivatory routine. Eloise, thoughts and questions for yourself?
Well, I've just downloaded it, actually.
Eloise, so impressed. Straight in there, downloaded it straight away.
Yeah, well, the little bit that you read out was quite sort of something that I'd like to read. Mm-hmm. So I'll give that a go.
Well, there you go.
Hi there, Tosca. My name's Ben. I just wanted to quickly ask, in fact... do you find, we were talking about a book festival, a local book festival earlier. Do you find when you go around and you do events, things like that, that your audience are different demographics? Are they quite specific? Are they interested in certain things? Or do you find it's a wide variety of people who are interested in your book? And often, how do they find out about your book? Is it through word of mouth, or is it through social media, the internet, anything like that in particular?
You know, I think that the biggest way that people hear about books is often word of mouth. Readers who are very passionate about books or authors tend to be the best advocates for those books and authors. For my demographic, I'd say 60% women, 40% men. I've been fortunate to have a wide variety of readers of ages and backgrounds and interests. It probably helps that I write in a couple different genres. I write thrillers, and I also write historical, and then I do have I call it post-apocalyptic kind of fantasy series as well. So that has probably helped as well. And then, you know, once you get your loyal readers, they're just, you know, these intrepid souls that are willing to come along for the journey, whatever happens next. And I love that about them, because, you know, I can say, well, I'm going to now do this kind of a story, and they'll say, okay. So it's wonderful.
Tosca, you just write whatever you like, basically. That's the important thing. We know it's going to be genius. They say your life flashes before your eyes when you die, but they don't tell you that every detail comes screaming back to life, that you taste every bite of every meal you savoured, feel the shower of every rain you walked in, smell the hair against your cheek before that last parting kiss, that you will fight to hold on to memory like a drowning person, gasping for poisoned air. Is that mm-hmm. wordsmith a genius at work?
Wonderful, absolutely wonderful.
that was fun to write.
Abigail, any thoughts from yourself?
I am actually curious.
when you decide on a genre, is this something that you decide on before you start writing, or is it something that just kind of happens while you're writing it?
Generally, I know the genre ahead of time because that is a conversation that takes place with my agent and my publisher. So I knew that The Progeny would be a thriller. I knew that we would have a second book. It's called Firstborn. And then I just had a book release yesterday, actually, and it's called The Line Between. And that was, again, premeditated, and that was the result of my going to New York and meeting with my publisher with a short list of ideas and saying, you know, these are the ones that interest me, so what do you think of these? And then we talked it through. So we know well ahead of time what they will be.
I see.
And The Line Between is all about an extinct disease re-emerging from the melting Alaskan permafrost to cause madness. Mm-hmm. Madness in its victims.
Madness.
For former apocalyptic cult member Winter Roth, see what you did there? It's the end she's always been told was coming.
Mm-hmm.
The Line Between. By, indeed, according to Stina Holmes from New York Times and USA Today, the queen of psychological twists. Tosca, it's been fantastic connecting with you, good self. I'll be fascinated to find out what Robin Pierce, our Starburst literary soul, actually makes of it in a few moments' time when we speak to him. But have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you, Tosca?
Oh, it's been so wonderful. It's been so great to connect with you. I love the UK. I don't get there enough, but you're making me homesick to come back. So.
Well, the next critical question is, will you be kind enough to keep connecting with us? And presumably, you are still based in Chicago?
No, I'm based in Nebraska completely. Well, I'm married to a farmer. So.
I completely got that wrong, wasn't it? So actually, it was Lincoln, Nebraska, really, as opposed to Lincoln, England, etc.
Yes, it really is.
Chicago.
Yeah. And it's very cold here.
Yeah. Well, just share how cold it is in Nebraska at this moment, please.
I think it's minus 10 degrees. That's Fahrenheit. So I'm not quite sure what that is, Celsius, but you can't go out longer than just about 10 minutes before you risk very serious frostbite right now. It's just insanely cold. Mm. Yeah.
There we are. There's a place, Eva, you probably won't be checking out in the near future, at least not in December or January or February.
Unfortunately, I won't. I suffer from the cold too much here.
And in Lincoln, England, it's still just about 1 degree, 0 degree, 3 degrees. Who knows what's happening? Tosca Lee, many thanks indeed. A reminder, of course, you can go to toscalee.com. Presumably, will that be the best place to go to, Tosca, to find out more details about what we've been chatting about? Excellent.
Yes, absolutely.
A round of applause for Tosca Lee, please.
Yay, I
have to ask this, no relation presumably to Stan Lee or indeed any of the other Lees, that Tanith Lee that is actually out there from that point of view.
Yes, no relation, unfortunately.
Well, I'm sure they would try to find a way if there was. I'm sure Stan would be looking down to one eye thinking, yes, Tosca's my girl.
What a drag it is, the shape I'm in. Well, I go out somewhere, then I come home again. A lot of cigarette, cause I can't get no sleep. There's nothing on the TV, nothing on the radio that means that much to me. All my life, I'm watching America. All my life, there's panic in America. In America. Oh, 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 oh. Yesterday was easy, happiness came and went. I got the movie script, but I don't know what it meant. A lot of cigarette, cause I can't get no sleep. There's nothing on the TV, nothing on the radio that means that much to me. There's nothing on the TV, nothing on the radio that I can believe in. All my life, I'm watching America. All my life, there's panic in America. Oh, 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 there's trouble in America.
Yesterday was easy as I got the news. Oh, when you get it straight, you stand up, you just can't lose. Give you my confidence, all my faith in life. Don't stand me up, don't let me down, no, I need you tonight. To hold me, say you'll be here. To hold me, say you'll be here. To hold me, say you'll be here. Oh. All my life, watching over artist, writer, and Renaissance man, congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
This is slightly scary. Still, after you followed Countess Dracula, Anne Bathory, and Tosca Lee, why not? Especially when you actually have to apologise to Anna Lewis and say, sorry Anna, I was dialing the wrong number. Ooh! It does happen, doesn't it, Philip Hurdwood, ace, a voiceover person extraordinaire?
It's not the best line in the world.
Right, okay, well...
It was all right a moment ago, but it's not so much good now. Anyway, we'll carry on. I will attempt to decipher through the airways and cracklements and see if I can determine what you're saying.
Exactly.
Anyway, how are you? How are you all out in radio land?
All well.
They're all well. Philip, would you like to speak to Abigail, Eloise, Eva, or Ben?
Anybody who cares to put their hand up, you, in the corner there.
That would be Eloise.
Absolutely the very same.
Hello.
Hello, Eloise, how are you doing?
What
have you been talking about? I bet you've been talking about Alexius as well as anything else in the corridor before you came in. No? But anyway... Eloise, what was the subject of discussion before I joined you?
A writer, Tosca Lee, and her new book that came out yesterday, I believe.
Oh, well, okay.
The radio show plugging a book. Who would have thought we'd actually get
Who
to that
would
stage?
Have thunk, my goodness me. Next thing you'll be called the Graham Norton of Siren Radio. Oh,
please. I think there'll be legal action if that was the case from one party at least.
Well, it's there as a showcase for the great and good, isn't it? And,
I think
Siren Radio is on its way to being something unakin to that in its own way.
Well, it has to be said, exciting news from Eloise Sheehan's creativity, because Eloise, which famous actor actually asked and insisted you send him a copy of your latest essay?
David Morrissey.
And that can't be bad,
really. Oh, gosh, well done. And how did that happen? What actually happened there? I mean...
I met him a few months ago because I work for MCM Comic Con. I met him there, and I was just talking to him about Charles Dickens and other such things.
As you do.
Yeah.
Wow. And then so you wrote a piece, did you? Yeah.
I wrote a piece, yeah, for a module on my course.
Called Heroes and Villains.
Called Heroes and Villains.
At the University of Lincoln. There are lots of heroes,
villains. That's another plug. That's not plugging the university.
and I didn't expect him to remember me, and I got a message... last Monday, asking if I could send a hard copy of my work to him.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really impressive. And he's actually responded, has he, so far, to it?
I only sent it the other day.
He won't have had it.
No, he's working this week, but he said he'll pick it up next week.
So. Oh, cool. How exciting is that? It's nice to have the endorsement of somebody in the public eye, somebody of that kind, you know. I mean, what was your intention? I mean, do you sort of... You know, do you want to start doing some screenwriting or, you know, write TV stuff? Or is it just generally that you wanted his endorsement?
I'm quite a big fan of his, so the fact that he's just reading my work is amazing for me.
I'm going to put you on the spot here, Eloise.
Brilliant.
Choice between David Morrissey, Paul McGann, Paul McGann, David Morrissey. Where are you going to go? Who's going to benefit from the autograph tattoo? Who are you going to go for?
I love them both. Yeah, I couldn't pick. They're both amazing.
Okay.
I think it's had David Morrissey hands down every time, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, you
although
say
they both—they both have their merits. Exactly. I mean, talking from an acting perspective, they both have their merits. Both very good.
As we identified indeed when Graham Harper was on the show just before Christmas, we're fairly certain that Graham will have worked in some way, shape, or form at the BBC with Eloise's grandfather.
My granddad, yes.
Your granddad, whose name is?
William Dennis.
Gracious.
William Dennis. And his job at the BBC was?
Head of scenery.
Exactly. So all that
head of what? Head of
scenery. Yeah. Scenery.
Oh, wow. Gosh, well, he would, of course. Yeah. How interesting.
Because he wasn't. He's not a minimalist, is Graham. You know, he doesn't sort of say, I just want to do something with no scenery whatsoever. He wants to have some background in there, he wants to have some psych, he wants to have sort of various other bits and pieces put together.
Well, I don't know, looking at the scenery that my grandfather made, it could have.
You were quite surprised. You were quite surprised when I did screen that Genesis of the Daleks episode.
Yes, I was.
Anyway.
And that was your granddad responsible for all that background scenery and everything.
Yeah, from first Doctor to fourth.
That is the most remarkable. It is an amazing skill, that, you know. That is remarkable work because, you know, they can actually make just what is essentially a flat screen. They can actually make that look like any kind of a, you know, another world, can't, you know, with depth and perspective and all of that, and a whole new magical world that you couldn't recreate in any other way. That's really exciting. That's a nice thing to be proud of.
Yeah, thank you.
You see, that's the sort of connections that's actually there. Even more wonderful, Abigail LeMay, who we've managed to actually address a number of her prejudices about Americans in this very program, I think, which has just worked well. Phil, have you been skiing recently?
Have I gone what?
Skiing.
No, although I nearly fell on my bottom on a long walk in the icy wastes of the common just outside the house.
Right.
I was walking down this hill, and I suddenly thought, my foot skidded on a sort of a rather icy, snow-covered stone, you know, a boulder, and I thought, this is it now, I'm going to go skidding on my backside all the way down this hill. But mercifully, I caught myself just in time. And I didn't, in fact, go skiing on my bottom down the hill. So, no, I haven't been skiing recently.
But recently.
And I've never been skiing. I wanted to go water skiing at one time, but I could never find a lake with a slope.
Nice.
They're impossible to find. I've looked everywhere.
Dreadful, dreadful. So, Abigail, what was it about skiing that actually led you to obviously do this stunt ski, which led to you breaking your hand and other such things?
Stunt skiing? My goodness gracious me. I hope you were paid. You were paid for this, I take it.
No. Oh, my gosh, I wish.
Oh, what?
Next time I'll sue.
What happened? We must know.
The conditions were really bad that day, so it was very icy and just not very, you know, well kept.
Can you get closer to the microphone, actually, Abigail?
Sorry.
It's okay.
I can hear.
Yeah, so it wasn't very well kept, and there was a ditch in the middle of the hill, so my ski tips caught the other end of the ditch, and I flew down.
Oh, dear. So were you doing a particular, what stunt were you actually attempting?
The stunt, I guess, was just trying to survive the black diamond.
Works for me, Abigail, you know.
Yeah, my stunt in skiing would be remaining upright for about 10 seconds. That would be a life crowning stunt for me, I can tell you.
Thankfully, she's okay now, apart from when she's in the shower, she has to use a bin bag. Best not go there, okay?
Well, I'm sure you can get bigger showers than a bin.
Exactly.
Oh, I know, when you cover up your joint or your limb something waterproof. Oh, you're in a cast. Oh,
yeah.
My goodness gracious.
Yeah, I broke the bones in my hand.
So this is only recent then? Oh, goodness gracious me.
Three or four weeks ago.
So that's not much fun, is it? So you won't be doing much skiing for the next while, I take it.
No. Maybe probably not till next year.
Maybe you could take up a gentler sport.
Hmm. Yeah.
Water skiing.
You know, like chess. Like chess, for example.
Chess. Yeah.
No, I think I would probably go for something like chess boxing.
You know, you could do high-risk, you know, stunt chess. You could do. I mean, a lot of people try that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's an absorbing game, I think, which I think should be made more of. I think we ought to, you know, create a drive for that, don't you, Alexius, on this show?
Stunt
chess.
Yeah, after Frostbite with Malmo, a Danish band, but a Swedish-sounding name, Phil Hamlin-Williams in the Lincoln Book Festival, William Curls in Edinburgh and The Progeny, and Annette Andre. What else can you say? Ben Lewis, any thoughts for Philip that you'd like to add?
Well, in fact, actually, Phil was the first one of the first people I had on my first show.
There we are.
Siren. That was back in...
He had you, Phil. He had you on his first show here, did that,
on my first show. Yeah. That was.
And how long ago was that, do you reckon?
It's July 2016. June 2016.
Oh, wow. Oh, well, that's relatively recent. Because, yeah. I mean, if you ask Alexius, you know, or Big Al, as some people call him in the business, yeah. We go back. Do we not?
We
go back almost as long as Charles Dickens has been writing novels in many ways, really. But
well, this is it. It's a long, long time. I mean, I think at that time, the radios were actually hand-cranked, mm-hmm. weren't they?
Yeah, you know, with the wireless back then.
And they had valves. I think they actually had valves rather than transistors in the day when we started broadcasting together. But nonetheless, it was all fun. You know, but there was no canned laughter, as there is on this show. And it was all natural, and it was all fun, and innocent fun.
Some people might say it was a living nightmare, but we got through it, so that's the important thing. And we'll continue to do so, because that's what we do.
We do that indeed.
Mm, exactly. Eva, would you like to put those last two questions to Phil Herdwood, please?
Hello, I will, Phil. I will, Phil. There we go.
Phil to my intimates. Phil to my mates, yeah.
Have you enjoyed your link with us today, Phil?
I have, short and sweet, and I know that...
Haven't even had a chance to talk about your movie, haven't had a chance to talk about various other bits. Please, haven't had a chance to... How's Rachel Herdwood doing these days?
She's doing great, yeah. She's got her little babby she's looking after.
No, you mean your grandfather?
Yes, wow. She made me a grandpapa 8 months ago, wow. And she's got the most beautiful little boy. But also, she was in the second series of a show called Clique, which, as a university student, some of you guys might have seen. And you can get it on Catch Up TV and all that kind of stuff. It was on, I think, BBC Three, mm-hmm. and it's a really absorbing and really tense drama, and she had a rather key role in that, and I recommend you start it off with series one, and I suppose there's always a chance that there might be a series three, but she was in series one and series two of that, and the series two ended about a month and a half ago or something like that, and it was really good. So she's doing that, doing voiceovers and looking after her little darling boy, called Liam.
It's time she came back on the show, of course, obviously.
Clique,
of course, Clique.
The very same, absolutely, yeah. Clique. And I do recommend it. I mean, it was, if anybody can get, you know, Catch Up or anything like that, it's really well worth watching, because it's really absorbing. And I was quite surprised, not, you know, something that would appeal to my particular demographic, my sort of age group, and I only watched it because my daughter was in it, but it really drew you in. It really did draw you in, and became, you know, quite, not sort of addictive, but certainly very, very compelling drama. You just wanted to find out what happened next, you know, that's a very important part, and some really well-drawn characters, really well-acted, a young cast, all absolutely first-rate, so a lot of that cast have gone on to other things as well, which is fantastic. So, yeah, I hope the show does get another third series, because I think it's well worth it, and I think it would have an audience, definitely.
And the second question, Eva, is?
Will you be wanting to join us again soon?
Well, I suppose only if Alex, you know, asks me, but...
Yes, I think you answer.
That's a yes.
Come on, we're going over to Wales next, so we've got to be brave. We're crossing the border. We're heading to speak to Robin Pearce. Can we have a round of applause for Phil Herdwood? Hurrah.
Thank you very much. I'm bowing as you speak.
Can you remember the first time old temptation took a hold of you? You gazed and gazed into the mirror, hanging from the bathroom wall, and they decided just exactly where it was you were going to. Given the opportunity, you'd strip me bare. Given the opportunity, you'd take me. I have nothing more to add, I have nothing left to say, so just go away. I'm throwing it all away. Do you remember the last time
for a spin. You were riding, but nearly died in all the hurt and anguish you put your loved ones through. Given the opportunity, you'd strip me bare. Given the opportunity, you'd take me. That went with the haziness, sucked into the bright lights, seeking the high life, threadbare and down on your knees. Given the opportunity, you'd strip me bare. Given the opportunity, you take me. I have nothing more to add, I have nothing left to say, so just go away. I have nothing more to add, I have nothing left to say, so just go away. I have nothing more to add, I have nothing left to say, so just go away.
So we've got from Superman the Movie, Jeff East, we've got Eric Roberts from a certain Doctor Who, Paul McGann epic. We've also got John Challis, yes, the John Challis, Bill Duke, Adam Baldwin, Terry Hatcher from, of course, Tomorrow Never Dies, and Sean Meyer, and Dean Cain, and Steve Guttenberg, and Peter Fascinelli, and more, all at Comic Con Liverpool, 8th to 10th of March. It looks highly likely that you will be there, will you not, Eloise?
Oh, definitely.
Will you be there too, Ben Lewis?
I'd certainly like to be there, yes.
Because Steve Guttenberg and the joys of Terry Hatcher, marvellous. Will you be joining us, Abigail LeMay?
I may.
May, exactly. That can be located, of course, by simply going to For the Love of Sci-Fi, Comic Convention, Liverpool.co.uk. That's Comic Convention, Liverpool.co.uk. And you can sort out all manner of marvellous things. We said we plug that with Amy. We'll do the more plugging as the days proceed, because we've also got Sci-Fi Weekender. And even more wonderfully online now, with a critique of the programme, we have our lead writer from Starburst magazine, Robin Pierce. How are you, Robin?
Good evening. How are you?
We're okay, Robert. Well, I say we're okay, but, you know, if we all went into a list of our medical challenges and the things that people say are wrong with us, we'd just give up now. So let's not bother, okay? Just step away from that and let's just go with the life. Enjoy the whole thing. Savour the moment.
Enjoy the ride.
What have you made of the programme? The bits that you've heard in Wales, or indeed is it a case of heard anything in Wales? You must be joking.
Actually, I have done all my research and I've heard the whole programme.
Wow. That's epic.
I really enjoyed listening to Annette Andre talking about Alan Abel, about his...
Are you still there? Have we gone... For a moment, we thought Alan Abel had gone completely, and then suddenly silence struck, and Eloise was saying, yeah. I bet you didn't write that into the programme that you're supposed to be prepared with all the detailed music as opposed to random routines. Sorry.
Do you know what really took me back, though?
What
you played
back?
Wondrous Stories by Yes.
Yes.
And a few years ago, about 4 years ago now, the Sci-Fi Weekender that you mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
Half of the Haven Park here in Pwllheli, North Wales, was dedicated to prog rock, and the other half was the Sci-Fi Weekender. And they had a special guest to close off the whole festival one Saturday night. And David Howe and I were standing there watching Rick Wakeman, and he played Wondrous Stories live. It was an amazing event.
Wow. It's like epic. It's,
we're all too young in here to know.
That is true, Ben. That's absolutely right.
It is.
But it's still
ageism. No.
I'm so sorry.
You know, one of these days I'm going to have to make it over to the studio just to meet these little whippersnappers you've got.
When you say whippersnappers, I like to see them as the next generation. And you didn't refer to, like, Deanna Troi as whippersnapper, which is going to... You don't necessarily refer to, you know, the Star Trek Discovery cast as whippersnappers, etc. But I
see absolutely. I would describe them as such, yes. They haven't made it to classic status with me yet. Oh. It'll take a few years.
Yeah. Well, never mind. Will you be purchasing a copy of The Progeny from Tusker Lee?
I think probably, yes. And I'll be looking out to see it on my screen as well.
I suspect it might be reviewed in the Stone Tapes. Just a thought there, when it actually arrives in all sorts of other bits and pieces. Conventions. Abigail, you effectively decided to do science fiction, the English module. Weren't really sure where it was going to go, where it was going to take you. Ended up sort of doing an essay on robots.
I did.
More, exactly.
Which I told you robot. I wasn't a fan of, yes, robots.
You did, exactly. And yet you still chose it.
Mm-hmm.
Very impressive.
Find us on Facebook.
Exactly, just like that.
So well timed.
You mentioned the robots and suddenly whoosh.
Punch your face.
Exactly. Interruptions today.
Where are you going?
Dinette is coming.
So what, pray tell, would you be considering in terms of, have you ever been to a Comic Con or a Comic Con event?
I have not, but I have wanted to go before. Especially because I live so close to Toronto, there's a lot going on over there when it comes to the conventions. Mm. And when I was growing up, I was a huge fan of Adventure Time, so I always wanted to go and like meet the actors, the voice actors and stuff. Now it's Stranger Things, so yeah, I think, you know what, I'd be down to go to a convention.
Mm-hmm. Ben, I appreciate that we've been working long and hard since 2016 trying to convert you into some sort of science fiction. So
I've got a bit of me. I'm
Thunderbirds and Shane Rimmer, of course.
Exactly. I mean, I'm all over that. But
Terry Hatcher, Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yes, I don't mind a bit of Star Wars as well. You know, so I'm getting there. Okay. You know, John Challis, well, he's a very nice, nice bloke. But
there's something that worries me here, Alex. To be honest with you. You keep mentioning Terry Hatcher and Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yes.
To me, Terry Hatcher will always be the best Lois Lane I have ever seen.
Well, not a Desperate Housewife at all, then. Oh, well,
no, oh, God, no. But Lois Lane, I mean, Margot Kidder, you know, can't hold a candle to Terry Hatcher as Lois Lane. Controversial, but hey, there we are.
Will you be making it to Liverpool? Is that too far away from Wales? I don't know these days. I mean, you know.
I might do. It depends. I'm not quite sure what the Starburst Film Festival states are. Yeah.
Well, neither are we. No, that's why we're obviously going with people who like us. You know, that's a bit... Only kidding. We love you, Ed Fortune. Honestly, we do. And the rest of the guys. And we'll be back on soon. Eloise, you've worked for Comic Cons. You've experienced the whole thing, etc. I mean, I'm sharing between yourself and probably Robin, advice really for the newbies like Eva, like Ben, like Abigail, who maybe it's a whole new world for them.
I mean, I probably go to too many. It's probably a problem at this point. But they're just really fun. Just try and enjoy it. It's great watching everyone else's enthusiasm as well.
Can you go to too many Comic Cons?
My parents say yes.
Any advice from that one, Robin? Because I mean, you seem to have made quite a good living out of the whole sort of system in terms of...
Comic Cons, I would say get there early. Spend the extra couple of pounds on an early bird ticket, because as soon as the masses come in, you'll be queuing all day for the autographs. And once you're in, hit the must-haves first. You know, you'll probably have a list of absolute red, must get these at all costs. Then you've got your ambers and your greens. Do the reds first, because that's where the crowds will be.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to actually just go for the press areas and just do various other bits and pieces. I can't be doing it with the crowd and hanging out from that point of view, honestly. Only kidding.
Hanging with the peasants, Alex. Oh.
Because actually, Robin, what can we expect from Sci-Fi Weekend, which we've also agreed with Sam and Dave, of course, to actually be doing some media coverage for that as well. So what, given that it's in Sheffield, of course, whole new world for everybody at the end of March, what sort of things will we be looking for that one?
I haven't actually been to the Sheffield venue. I've done the ones that were basically a stone's throw from the house, and they've asked me to be at Great Yarmouth, which I'm more than happy to do. I believe it's a much smaller venue than the Bushalli one, where we basically took over the whole of the Haven site, and there were three distinct and different stages. So how that's going to work in Sheffield, I don't know. This will be their third time there, I believe.
Mm.
Now, next year, things turn around a little bit because...
Like Bright Eyes. Turn around Bright Eyes.
Historically, the Sci-Fi Weekender takes place in early March.
Mm.
The main one. Sci-Fi in the City, the smaller sort of sister convention, takes place in October in Sheffield. Now, this is the 10th year of Sci-Fi Weekender, and for this year only, we're doing it the other way around. It's a two-part celebration. Part one is in Sheffield. Part two is over in Great Yarmouth. Then I believe next year, when things normalise a little bit more, Great Yarmouth will be the venue once again in March.
And we haven't even spoken about Sci-Fi Scarborough, my own little favourite, but still what the heck. Comic-Con Liverpool, we said we'd mention it one more time. It takes place at the Exhibition Centre in Liverpool, King's Dock, Liverpool. And you can obviously go online and register now. I'm obviously so overwhelmed, the voice is going. Still, only another 8 minutes to go. If I can see through that, then all will be well with the world. Eva, do you feel that clearly all your entertaining of the troops in places like Saltfleet, Humberside...
Oh. Joyce and, it,
and indeed the southwest of England, would they be benefited by a little bit of science fiction stuff?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think I've ever been to an actual Comic-Con.
Mm.
So I would definitely be up for that.
Okay. Well, there we are. It looks as though the team's been established. Where else would you like to go, Robin, in terms of your review of the programme? Because let's face it, Phil Leonis is not going to be back with us until he becomes married, which is going to be end of February, more or less. He's coming back for the 24th, I know. He's having so many pre-wedding meetings. The amount of stress he's putting himself under in terms of the coordination. I thought they had wedding planners in the States. I thought the likes of various Adam Sandlers were around to actually sort these things out. And Drew Barrymore, I thought they could have looked after these things. Apparently not, you know.
Yeah, you pay the people to do this for you, don't you?
But anyway, that means, of course, the bonus is you get the chance to review the programme. So what bits would you like to share as worth accessing again on the podcast?
Definitely your interview with Maria Malmo about Frostbite, The Inevitable End. I enjoyed that music. It was very evocative. It actually kind of also felt a little bit unnerving. It just fit its title. I enjoyed that very, very much.
Nice. Spooky, but nice.
Spooky, yes. I could imagine it sort of, had not they had a theme to Twin Peaks, it would fit that kind of programme.
I would actually go on record as saying I think it should be used by the CW network for the progeny.
Oh.
Mm, there we are.
Ooh.
That's one out there. From
you should get credit for that idea when they roll the titles on the programme, you know.
Right, there you go. Eva, would you like to put those last two questions to Robin Pierce, please?
I will. Robin, have you enjoyed your link with us today?
Midweek Drive is always a pleasure to be on.
And it's always a pleasure to hear from you as well.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. And will we be hearing from you again soon?
As soon as I get the word from the boss in the big chair, yes.
Of course. In the big chair. Who the heck that was?
That's your new title, Alex.
It's a tragedy of having to have a delay to the Stone Tapes until the end of the month because of Sam going off to the States, etc. But still, life continues. That's the important thing. Thanks to William Coles, thanks to Maria, thanks to Phil Hanley-Williams, Annette Andre, Tosca Lee, Philip Hurdwood and Robin Pierce. And you, dear listener, of course. Thanks to Abigail LeMay. Yay, Abigail, stunt ski person extraordinaire. Not with us tomorrow morning, of course, Abigail, because you're going to be seeing the British medical people.
I will.
That's okay, then. Again, if they say, are you American? Just hit them, okay?
Oh, my God.
they're used to it. They'll just see it as an exchange student.
Can you believe it?
It's way forward. Ben, back in the morning to talk about a whole range of things.
Indeed, yes.
Eva, back in the morning.
Of course, I'm going to find a way past this.
She's going to find a way past this darn thing.
I am very determined to do this, Alex.
And so you should. For the benefit of Robin and the listener who might be thinking, what are they talking about? We've had big structural changes around the railway track at the bridge here at Lincoln. Big structural changes. You can't just walk onto campus now without at least circumnavigating about 4.5 miles worth of land, etc.
Probably further.
which is always fun when it's in the middle of winter, so that's even better. You know, it's just perfect timing in so many ways. Molly's going outside, and there's a whole way. Would you like to give a wave to some of the fabulous folk of the Film and Television Studies people there who are in the background there, sort of waiting for Eloise to actually have autographs and various other bits and pieces. She's giving her a thumbs up. It's great. Sorry, just painting a scenery here. That's it. Eloise back with us next week?
Yeah, of course.
That's fantastic. Of course. Eloise even sent me a text to say thanking me for being on the show. It's very nice. Very polite. Very important. That's it. He says as he almost wheezes his way through the whole thing. Ben, what do we say now? What sort of theme should we actually say? I mean, what's the buzz thing? I mean, I don't know, Robin's a writer. I mean, what sort of things would you
actually... We've had a lot of writing. Happy writing, maybe? Or
happy writing.
Or we've had sci-fi and
happy
writing.
Happy starburst reading. That'd be good. That'd go
how about not the sweets. The skies?
So, yeah.
Well, happy winter day.
No.
It's the coldest day of the year,
I think,
isn't it?
From The Thing, he's nailed it there. Keep watching the skies. So, one, two, three. Keep watching the skies. In a hurry. It's still a minute when there's no one there. Both our hoodies red. You're in my head. Yet there's no pressure. At least that's what we always say. Me like a star.